Oh, it's such an honor, Danny, to be a part of this amazing podcast you're doing here. And it's just really cool to be talking about this book.
That was so fun.
Yeah, it sure was, especially the quiz.
Thank you for your wonderful questions.
Best when these things just turn into a conversation.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, you obviously got the book.
Good on you for fighting the good fight too.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you, guys.
I love your enthusiasm. I just think it's a brilliant thing you're doing, a podcast about, you know, books, and you do a lot of great interviews, so I'm really honoured to be part of it.
I so enjoy listening to the podcast. Truly, I love it. And it does just feel like you're having a chat with your mate.
You are listening to Words and Nerds, talking to your favourite authors.
Welcome Morten Dewar all the way from Denmark. Morten is the award-winning author of 54 books in Danish, which have been translated into 9 languages. He lives in Copenhagen, and this is his first book to be published in English. Zenobia is a haunting and powerful graphic novel. With very few words, Morten Dewar and Lars Horneman show all the devastation and despair of the Syrian refugee crisis. I'm your host, Danny V. Welcome to the podcast, Morten. It's an absolute pleasure to speak with you today about your beautiful and haunting graphic novel, Zenobia, and you are my first guest from Denmark.
Thanks for having me.
Now, the story is about a young girl forced to escape war-torn Syria and take refuge across the sea. I know this is a very important story to tell, but why was this an important story for you to tell?
Well, we started on this project in the summer of 2015, and that was really the year when lots of people were talking about Syria. I mean, they had been talking about Syria for many years, of course, but then this summer the whole thing kind of exploded in the media, and lots of refugees were coming to Europe and Denmark and Sweden. Even more were coming to Sweden. But the whole discussion in the media was so polarized. And I just got kind of fed up with that. You know, on the one hand, you had a lot of people saying refugees do not belong in Europe. And on the other hand, you had people arguing that that of course they do, but those kind of arguments just collided in a way that was not constructive.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And we're having the same conversations in Australia, you know, about that. And you do hear that conversation that's so negative and unempathetic to these people who are trying to escape some terrible places.
Yes, and then often the discussion comes down to numbers and economics, and it does feel very unfair and sad to just listen to this. And all of a sudden, on both sides, I think that ordinary people, suddenly they try to speak like experts, because they hear a lot of experts in the media. And really, when you think about the situation in Syria, it's not that easily fixed. People pretend to be experts, and I just kind of got fed up with the whole confrontational dialogue around these issues.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. And I think that's why the book is resonating with so many people, and definitely resonated with me when I read it. I liked what you said, that you wanted to make a story with a soft, quiet voice that reminds people war is tragedy in honour of the victims. And I really like this because many of the victims of war don't have a voice, or at least a human voice. Was this something you were trying to do, give a voice or a human face to these people?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, when I do children's books, which is my thing, I only write for children, then suddenly you get, I think, a different perspective, and you have to be personal. You have to create characters that are close to the children. So there's no way around giving a personal voice to the characters. Another thing is that when children think about these things, they are not dialectic. So they don't think about war as something that you can say for and against. War is simply wrong in a children's frame of mind. And sometimes it's just interesting for us adults, I think, to engage with that sort of non-dialectic way of thinking. Because usually we will hear all these experts and people on TV talking for and against nuclear weapons in the world or whatever. But children will just think it's just plain wrong, just as global warming is wrong. Let's stop it.
Because our protagonist, Amina, we see the world through her eyes and we can't help but think what's happening to her is wrong, you know. And instead of, like you said, focusing on the economics and the numbers and all this political stuff, it's a human story.
Yes, I was really inspired by the Swedish filmmaker Lukas Moodysson. Some years ago, I interviewed him about his movie called Lilja Forever. And that's a story about a girl from Eastern Europe who comes to Sweden and sees trafficked as a sex slave, basically. And he said to me that he wanted to do the same thing, make a non-dialectic story, because you cannot in any way say that there's for or against. I mean, it's the only against to be said about this kind of trafficking, right? But when you make a story like that, you have to be very certain that there are no gray areas where people can say, well, maybe it's good for them to earn some money, or maybe it's good for them to blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. So this is my inspiration, really, to also make this. It's a sad story, right? I mean, she doesn't, mm-hmm. the main character does not survive her efforts to flee the war. But that was on purpose. I've been writing for children now for quite some time, so I would naturally, when I want to tell the story, I would naturally focus on children, mm-hmm. whether it be a girl or a boy. But I think the sad ending might be inspired by this movie, because we did work on a more happy ending, mm-hmm. for a while. In the book, there is the shipwreck, also called Zenobia, which lies, I think, south of Cyprus in the sea, which is an actual shipwreck that a lot of people go diving at. So it's a very popular spot for sports divers. And by placing the wreck in the story, we pictured that Amina could be saved. She's lying in the sea and suddenly she's drifting towards the wreck, and she's being saved by the sports divers. So that was the whole idea about the wreck. But in the end, we had to change the ending to the ending we have now, which is a sad ending where she drowns.
I was reading it to my 4-year-old and my 6-year-old, because I don't think empathy should have a limitation on it. And so I was reading it to them because I would really like them to have empathy for other people in the world. And it's interesting that at the end they were like, oh, what happened to her? And so I may have fibbed a little bit and said, oh, see the light at the top of the water? That means she's probably going to be saved. And so I thought it's interesting, yes, that you could kind of almost read a picture book in a way, in a different way.
No, but that's very true. I mean, I think it's a book, or at least I hope it's a book that children of various ages will relate to with their own experience in mind. So when I showed the book to my children, they are older, so, but at the time I showed them the unfinished book as a PDF, mm-hmm. they were, I think, 12 and 15. And the 12-year-old said to me, oh, it's a nice book, but it's probably for children a bit younger than me, because look, the protagonist is younger and there's not many words, so it's easy read. That was her reference. But the 15-year-old said, oh, but this is not for children. Because her reference would be the whole thing about Syria and what she saw in the news. And I experience the same thing when I go to schools and talk with them. Younger kids will relate to the book in a certain way, and older kids will take it maybe much more serious.
Isn't that wonderful that a book can be read in so many different ways? And I read it myself the first time, and it really got me quite teary, actually. And I thought, I think this is a really important story for me to read to my own kids. But isn't that wonderful that it can be read in a number of different ways for a number of different audiences?
Yes, I think so. And I also believe that it's because maybe we took the very conscious decision not to include very dramatic, warlike events, like actual fighting in the war. we didn't include that. Mm-hmm. We are not showing wounded people and stuff like that. Because we wanted to make it accessible to also younger children, at least a certain age.
Yeah, and I think it definitely is. Now, our protagonist, Amina, is inspired by Zenobia, a queen. Tell us about the significance of Zenobia as a figure for her to aspire or who inspires her.
Well, it was really something that I accidentally saw on or found on Google. I tried to Google phrases or sayings like proverbs from Syria, because I'm always interested in stuff like that when I write. You know, how do people talk in their own language? What do they, what kind of word pictures do they use? And then there was one place where they were saying that a typical thing that a parent could say to their child would be, you know, you you can do your homework. You know, think of what Zenobia could do. You can do it as well. So what they're telling the kid is that, you know, remember this ancient queen, she could do all this. I mean, what she did was to conquer a vast territory and rule it for several years before she was again conquered by the Roman emperor. But I mean, for a brief moment in history, she was a very important figure. So nowadays, parents in Syria would be able to sort of remind their children, you know, you can do it. Just think of Zenobia. So I thought that was fascinating. And then I started writing, reading about, you know, Zenobia and Palmyra. And I just thought it was very fitting to put in the book. Also because Palmyra is a place that has been destroyed by war.
I thought it was wonderful, too, that she had a woman who was so heroic and courageous and powerful to look up to.
Yes, exactly. And but it was also, I mean, it's a very strong symbol to put in the book. But so I had to sort of negotiate with myself. Was it too heavy-handed? But then I ended up saying, no, this book is really not about subtext. You know, it's not mm-hmm. supposed to be a riddle. It's really upfront about the whole symbolic meaning. And that was okay, I think. I did have reservations because, of course, Zenobia is a hero to all in Syria, but also for the Assad regime. She's also on their money, mm-hmm. Their banknotes. So would she be too much of a nationalistic symbol? I was unsure about that. But then I thought, you know, history belongs to everyone. And it's really about who takes ownership of these kind of national symbols in the end. And if the wrong people have taken ownership, you can take it back.
I really like that, and I find that very interesting. I read a review that said this particular story isn't a story that requires words. And I think this was especially true for this book, because although it had a story to tell with the words, it was quite incredible how impactful the book was together with the words and the images, because it tells such a haunting and real story and really brings that human face. So do you think that the book is kind of a plea for people to have more empathy and to have more conversations, less about economics and politics and more about people?
Yes, I hope so. And that's also the reason why I thought it could be a great story to tell with pictures as a graphic novel. I always loved graphic novels and comics as a child. The problem in Denmark is that there are not much opportunity to do it because our circulation of books are so low. Mm-hmm. And of course, it's more expensive to ask an illustrator to do this work, which is quite big. But I do think that pictures convey feelings in such a great way that it just calls for your attention and empathy. Of course, words can do that as well, but there are something unique about pictures.
And I think having them together really told this story, and that the images are just beautiful. Now, your illustrator, Lars Horneman, how did you work together to create your vision of the story?
Yeah, so we normally when I write a children's book, I will write the story and submit the story to a publisher. And then they will, we will talk about who's going to illustrate. But before the story gets to the illustrator, it will be edited by the publisher and it will be fine-tuned and all that. But by doing it so, then you kind of end up with the text taking dominance and being taking the leading role. And I didn't want to do that like that this time, because I thought it would be better to just, you know, submit the story to Lars so that he could work on the story directly without first having it edited. So in 2015, that summer, I wrote the short story, and then Lars took the raw short story, you could say, and started doing the flow of the story and the sketches. And then later on, together with our editor, we started deleting text. So the short story you can actually read as a self-contained story. But after this whole process, then if you take out the text now, it doesn't make sense,
mm-hmm.
because a lot of the meaning has been made into pictures instead of words. So that's how we did it. And that's something I would like to explore further with, also with picture books.
Yeah, what a wonderful collaboration, bringing together the words and the images and then losing the words to still create that story. I think that's amazing. And the pictures, they're just so beautiful. They're minimalist. They have these gorgeous, strong colours. They're haunting, and, you know, Mina is just beautiful and so expressive in all the pictures. What were your thoughts when you first saw what Lars had created?
I thought it was wonderful, but I also knew what to expect, because I was really compelled by Lars's earlier work, and he made especially one comic book that was sort of a graphic novel for grown-ups, but I felt that it was it had the same simple way of expressing complex emotions, so and themes. So I really liked it. I like the way he's inspired by classical French comics,
mm-hmm.
Belgian comics, but turns it into something very serious.
Now, how wonderful that this graphic novel has been adapted for English audiences, published for Australia and New Zealand by UQP, and it was crowdfunded in Japan, and there's a US version coming out as well. Do the versions differ much?
I mean, the English version I know, because mm-hmm. I was involved with the translation, but there's a lot of versions coming out. It's been sold to 16 countries.
Wow.
And I don't read French. I don't read Spanish. So of course I flicked through them, and they seem to be telling the same story. But again, there's so little words.
Yeah.
So I think, I mean, there are not that many opportunities to sort of go wrong, I think, in the translation.
Mm-hmm. And 16 countries, it just goes to show how this resonates with everybody, you know, and even Australia, we're so far away from all of what's happening, but we relate to it within our own context too, you know, and I think that resonating with everyone really hopefully encourages people to then have more empathy, because they want to hear these kind of stories instead of what's just being shown on the news constantly.
Yes, I was surprised. I mean, the book is also coming out in places like Brazil and South Korea. So that those places are so far from Denmark and the Syrian conflict that I was just surprised. But again, then they read it as probably a more universal anti-war story, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. And a Spanish production company has also bought an option to adopt the graphic novel into a short animation film. Tell us about this. It sounds amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing. I think it'll be great. They approached us in August, so now they have bought the option for the movie. Then, of course, they have to raise money and all that, but hopefully it'll be done. But I think it makes a lot of sense, because when you read the book, especially in the start, Lars has tried to utilize some of the narrative language that we will see in a movie, like fast and slow motion. Also, the whole way the narrative works in terms of layers of words and pictures, it's sort of reminding me of a movie with a narrator that can freely jump between different story strands, flashback moments, fast forward, stuff like that. So it's very similar to an animated movie, I think. It reminded me a little bit about a treatment for a short movie.
Yeah, and I particularly love just how seamlessly we were drawn back into the past and then back into the present. And it was funny because I wondered if it was obvious to a six-year-old as well. So I said to my six-year-old, why do you think the colours have changed? And he was like, oh, I think this is a different time.
Yes, I think I totally agree. And this is also something Lars and I have been touring a few schools as well together. And the pupils seem to pick up on this very easily as well. And like I said before, we were really not interested in doing a story that would confuse people or make them, you know, haunt the meaning or chase the meaning. It's very upfront, the whole thing. But we wanted to make a stream of consciousness kind of thing anyhow. And if you want to do that without confusing people, you have to do something to anchor the timeline. And then so Lars used the colors for that, and I think it works.
Absolutely. Now, being a Spanish production company, is it going to be a kind of a silent film without any words, or is it going to be subtitled? Do you know any of that information?
No, I don't. I think it's very early stages mm-hmm. for them. So I only spoken to them a few times about how to actually do the movie. But this is a company that has been doing a lot of documentaries. So I think our common ground is, you know, is firstly the theme. Yeah. Of children that are marginalized.
It's got this universal humanity to it that everyone is resonating with everyone. So isn't that interesting?
Yes, I do believe it's, yeah. And well, to me, it's also surprising because coming from a small country in terms of the publishing industry here, we are not very used to our books traveling outside Denmark. So... Yeah, so we're just surprised, and it's great.
And it's also going to be a stage play in 2020.
Yes, that'll be a Danish stage play for children. And again, I don't know how they will approach this. As a writer, I'm very used to seeing my stories being interpreted by illustrators. So my main idea is just to kind of sit back and see what they come up with and have, you know, trust them to do something very, very nice with it. Yeah. But, you know, there might be even singing, you know, in the stage play, which I can't imagine. But but if they can, maybe it'll be good.
But how wonderful if the kids get to read the book and look at the illustrations and then watch a short animation and a stage play. Like, it's just capturing them at every kind of medium, isn't it? It's wonderful.
That'll be interesting, yes. Mm. And I am also a film critic for a newspaper here in Copenhagen. So I always, I'm greatly interested in how adaptations work.
Mm.
And so it'll be interesting to be adapted myself and see what happens.
Look, as a teacher myself, I'm an English teacher. I think it's an absolute wonderful resource for students to learn about empathy, our refugee crisis, visual literacy, using an economy of words and how images tell a story. And I'm actually going to take it into the classroom in Australia where I teach. So I think it's an incredible resource. Have you heard, being, you know, going to schools, how it's being used in the classroom and for what grades and what age groups?
Well, there was a Danish company here in Copenhagen that have these digital portals with educational material. And they are sort of the leading providers of this. So they have taken this book they don't have the actual book on the digital portal, but they have made material about the book.
Mm-hmm.
So it's literally available to all teachers if they want to use it. And what they've done is to make educational material with a heavy focus on drawing, not writing. And that's interesting, I think. So they sort of took the graphic novel premise very seriously. So now you will have children in Danish classrooms drawing their themes instead of writing.
Mm-hmm.
They will make drawings of, you know, how many items can I carry if I had to flee? How can I draw my hero? You know, like Amina has Zenobia, how can I draw my hero? They will make drawings like, what color does war have? Is it red like blood or black like death or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like that is how they work with the story.
Yeah, and it's wonderful.
I think it's a fascinating way of doing something different in terms of teaching them about literature.
Yeah, we have a similar thing in our Australian curriculum as well, looking at visual literacy. So I'm very interested in using that book. There's a lot going on for Zenobia, but do you have any other projects that you're currently working on or any future books that you can tell us about?
Yes, I mean, I've read many kinds of books, and when I've done a serious book like this, I tend to go in another direction for my next book, which will then be a funny book. But then now Zenobia has had its run here in Denmark, so I have made a few books after that. So now I'm back to the serious stuff in a way. So me and the illustrator Lars Horneman, we have been to Greenland in June. So we'll make a similar book like Zenobia in terms of the visual language and the sparseness of words. We'll make a book similar to that, but then this time the story will be about Greenland.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be especially about sexual abuse in Greenland, which is unfortunately quite a big problem.
Wow.
So again, it will be a very serious book and not your typical, you know, mm-hmm. Christmas present book. It'll be more of a book, again, that people will use in schools to talk about children's rights, hopefully.
Yeah, no, that sounds, it sounds very important. And I hope that I'll be able to read it in English if it gets translated, because I've got no chance of reading it in Danish.
Sure. We'll see. You know, of course, again, this, I think we will try to tell the story in a way that will be...
Yeah.
Possible to for children to relate to, because like war and dying from fleeing from war, the subject is very sensitive and, mm-hmm. and hard to express. But
yeah.
I think we have found a way in so that children can relate to it.
Wow, that's a very interesting piece of work. And yeah, I really look forward to looking at that as well, because I think it's a very important issue. And it's interesting having children look at these issues. I mean, it's important for, you know, understanding and knowledge and empathy, but I'll be very, very interested in the new project. Probably even more sensitive than this one.
I think it is, and it's probably a bit different, because when we talk about something like Syria and that whole situation, this is something that people talk about very openly. They even argue about it, like we talked about. But when it comes to incest or child abuse, sexual molestation, this is not something people talk that much about, even though it's a very common problem, unfortunately. The European Commission has a campaign called One in Five, or something like that. I can't remember the English translation, but it's one in five of children in the EU that has suffered some kind of sexual abuse, be it mild or not, but that's a huge number.
It's a huge number.
That's
why
they had this campaign. And there's no reason for me to think that the number be lower around the world.
Wow.
So, you know, so the problem is really a big one.
Mm.
And but you don't see it in the media as often as, you know, the war in Syria, whatever. But the number of victims are huge.
Yeah, and I'm this book that you're writing, it might be a way in, because I don't know if people know how to talk about this topic with children.
That's exactly right. And I, you know, so even countries where we as Danish feel very close to them culturally, there are huge differences in terms of how we protect children by law. And I think such a book will expose these differences. And I'm wondering if then this book can travel. But we'll see.
It sounds like a very serious issue and, yes, something that does cross cultures, but in a different way to Zenobia. Thank you so much for your time, Morten. The graphic novel is really one of those special pieces of work that really touched me. I actually cried twice while reading it, so that tells me something. And I hope that people will read it to their children, to their students, and read it as an adult, because I really think there can never be too much empathy for others or kindness in the world. And I'm really hoping that Zenobia, traveling around the world, really does this for us.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm really glad you liked it, and thanks for having me.
You are listening to Words and Nerds, talking to your favorite authors.